Cool. So barriers to scale. So this is all about breaking down the walls to scale. So we kind of touched on a few of these things. Capital might be one, people might be another, mindset might be another. Alon, if we can stick with you, what are like three obvious barriers, like key things that you think any entrepreneur is going to encounter as they start, the scaling process?
I think internally, I think the internal culture and I my sort of internal language for it is kumbaya, my friend. It's not like it used to be. And as you scale your business, you will see that people within your organization will say, it's not, you're not available to me anymore. And, it's not like it used to be. And it can't be. For me, it can't be. Just for me. And I'm ready to find that for me, because for other people, that's fine. But for me, it can't be. And so for me, I have a decision to make, is either I want to make them happy or make me happy. And if they want to be in a small business where it is kumbaya, my friend, then they need to be in that business. But this business is growing. My relationship with that business has to change, and theirs has to change. And if they are wanting to be in a business that is growing slowly and for other purposes, that's fine. But if they want to be in a business that I am heading up, which is a growth business, they need to either grow, piss or get off the pot. You see, Rich, this is what you do to me. Okay? Yeah. So that's a big issue, is the internal culture that prevents growth. And I must say, I battle with that. I battle with that all the time. And I'm getting a little bit better and better at it. And it's not about this. And in fact, I just came from a board meeting today. It's not about not being human around it. It's about saying that this individual cannot grow now. They need to go there. They don't need to exit. They just need to be in this role. And because what happens is, very often when we start a business, the people that come along and are prepared to take the salaries we pay, we have huge loyalty to them. And then what happens is that those businesses grow and their competency doesn't grow with the requirement. And by the way, that happens for you, the entrepreneur, as well. So the next thing is the question that I have on my wall is, how are you standing in the way of Raise Corp? I ask myself that question every single day, because I know I have a limit. And as soon as I feel that I can't get to that point, then for me, it's my role is to step aside and put somebody in who can take it to that level. And I'll change my relationship and be like one of those people who will be walking around with my walking stick and going, it's not like it used to be, Okay. So the second thing is me. And the third thing is actually the industry itself that you're in. Because if the industry is aging, or changing, and you're trying to scale within the context of a industry that's in decline or very mature, it's a far harder thing to do. It's not impossible, but it's a far harder thing to do.
Great stuff. Howard, in your experience consulting over there in the States, what are the kind of barriers that you've encountered? Most common barriers, if you were to pick three, what would they be?
I think about two of them. One is, most businesses have not figured out and really refined how to get a customer or a client. That they've done it in a way that's worked to a point, but to accelerate the business and to really scale, you have to get very, very good at creating a customer. I think, Peter Drucker has that famous quote that the purpose of a business is to create a customer. So I think that the rest of it is that they, I'm paraphrasing, that therefore it only has two functions, marketing and innovation. So, but I think the headline is, how do you create a customer? And how can you get better and better and more efficient and more dialed in to getting a customer? So, if you think about, I try to think about a way to simplify the formula for growing a business is, how do you put as much intention and focus on taking friction out of getting a customer, getting a client, getting a listener? And at the same time, how do you put as much focus on how do you take as much cost to maintain and delight that customer? If you can do both of those things and find people who delight in doing both of those things to do those pieces for you, you will scale and scale profitably. But most businesses either focus on one or the other, or they don't really elevate their marketing and their sales to the point where they reduced a lot of the friction out of getting a customer. And they don't think about the costs that it takes to maintain and delight that customer.
So, Rich, if I could switch to you. When you cast your mind back to the beginning of starting to scale Missing Link, what did you discover, either about yourself or through trying to grow the Missing Link brand and to become South Africa's leading presentation company? What did you encounter? What did you learn in your own journey when it came to scale in the beginning?
So the easiest thing was to avoid competition altogether. You know, one of the biggest constraints to scaling is to have a lot of competition. I think it was in 0 to 1, they speak about just eliminate all competition. When I started, I had what I refer to as a stone's throw business. I could take a stone, I could throw it out my window, and I could hit somebody else who did what we did, interactive design services, you know, interactive CD-ROMs, videos, web pages, things like that. So I looked at one area of the business that nobody else wanted to focus on, and that was presentations. And I saw that there was a need there was a pain there, like people are really crap at this, and I built up from there. So the way to become one of the best respected X's in anything is do something where there's less competition. I realized that I wanted to make the race unfair. I wanted an unfair advantage. So instead of being, you know, a 5-horse race and competing in a 5-horse race, those were shitty odds. So I said I wanted to be a 2-horse race. I wanted it to be me versus the best of the other 4. And that's what we set out to do. So we set out to separate ourselves completely. So I was the king of a very small hill, right? Everybody else has bigger businesses, but nobody knows who they are. They're just one of another 100 design agencies. We're one of a very, very few presentation companies. But for me, again, scaling reputation was speaks to my value and what I want to achieve. So that turned my dial a lot better. The other thing I want to just talk about quickly, another thing that I realized, though, was since I started the company, and it was actually in a conversation I had with Alon and Kumaran, who's there as well, was that we were once asking each other a kind of hypothetical question. And the question was this, and we all had to write down on a piece of paper, how much, if you had to bet everything right now to grow your business, if you had to put everything on the line to bet it on really, really growing your business, what percentage of your current wealth and business would you be willing to bet? And I think if you look at Alon and I, you would realize which one of us was willing to bet more. And I'm not going to go into the answers, but I will tell you that I was at about 20%. And the mistake was that my AR account was full. My at-risk account was fuller 21 years into starting the business. So when I started Missing Link, my at-risk, my assets at-risk account was empty. There was no risk. If I started something and I failed, I'd move back in with my parents, right? Nobody would have any shame. I was 22 years old when I started the company. But as the company grew, I had more at risk. I've got kids. I've got a lifestyle I've built. And I'm too scared now to bet that. So fear started to take over. And that's one of the biggest constraints to scale, is that you have more to lose the more you grow. So the faster you can scale, I guess, the better, because everything happens so quickly that you don't notice it. By scaling slowly, like I've done, and almost organically as I've done, you get used to everything along the way. So now if you ask me, am I willing to put everything at risk to get slightly more? No, I'm not. What I am willing to do, though, is to compartmentalize the business I've built and to start trying to build other companies. And that's why Alon is about growing one big business. I'm about planting seeds of lots of little ones.
Cool. I want to stick on fear for a second, because I think it's the one thing that's universal to every human being. And I think last time I checked, everyone is human in this room. So how does one approach fear? I mean, Alon, in your experience, you know, 20,000 businesses, and you know, what have you encountered as kind of easy things that any entrepreneur can apply to overcome the common barrier to scale being fear?
So first of all, let me recognize that I too fear. Okay, I think loss is the fear of losing is in me as well. But I have a relationship with it that might be slightly different to other people. I know singer Kumaran was mentioned that, you know, in his journey, he literally didn't even put up his own house. He put up his parents' house as collateral, you know, for, which is even worse in a weird way, to build his business. And Kumaran's thing is, will you bet the farm? Will you keep betting the farm on this, right? Now, when I was 23, my first business that I was in, and I had that investor that in me, and I built a business called the New York Sausage Factory. It was in Pinetown in Durban, and it was an absolute abysmal failure. And I was told that it would be a failure by an accountant who had done the numbers and said it would not work. But I was, you know, young and arrogant and all those things that youth brings, and stupid. And I tried to make this business work, and it failed, quite frankly. And then it took me quite a while to sort of come to terms with that. First of all, like, I was given money, I had education, I had a mentor, I had everything, and I had failed. So then you start looking to blame everyone, and then you come back to yourself and say, no, it's me. And then finally, I pluck up the courage to go to this man, and I go to his apartment, a penthouse, and I go in, and I say to him, you know, I failed, and if it takes me the rest of my life, I'll pay you back. And sort of try and leave. And he goes, sit down. And he says to me, did I back you or did I back the business? And I said, you backed me. And he says, well, right now the business has failed. If you walk out that door, you have failed, right? Now, what did you do wrong? And what would you do different the next time? And then I mentioned that to him. And the next time he backed me, he didn't back me with money, he backed me with people. Okay. So why I'm telling you the story is because my relationship with fear changed then, because it always became about the fear is that the business fails, because I know that I'll keep trying. I'll get up again. I'll be depressed for a while. Okay. I'll probably get a beard. Okay. And then I will go at it again, because that's who I am. So I will never fail for as long as I stand up again. Now, there's a concept in entrepreneurship called reentry rate. And I've actually just literally finished writing an article on this today, called reentry rate. And reentry rate is about the number of times entrepreneurs come back after failure. Okay. In the US, it's 3.6 times. In South Africa, it's 1.1 times. We fail once and never come back.
Out of 10, are you talking about?
Once. We just fail once. We try it, it doesn't work, and then we go and get a job. Okay. Right? We never come back again. Okay. So to me, it's about the fact, because the relationship is that I failed. Whereas it's about, I think when the nuance is when you shifted over to the business has failed, and I tried damn hard, and I made all these mistakes, but I'm going to come at it again. It's a different relationship with fear. And so that's sort of, maybe I'm bullshitting myself, but that's how I live, is that I live in fear that the business will fail, not that I will fail.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. Rich, how have you approached fear? I mean, you speak in front of thousands of people all around the world. You know, you coach speakers to overcome their fear of speaking. What do you want to share with our viewers and the guys tonight about approaching fear in the context of scale?
Absolutely nothing. I have no idea. I have no idea what to say around that. Speaking in front of people isn't scary. Standing in the middle of a crowd of 100 people, that's scary for me, and I avoid it. Speaking in front of hundreds of people is easy, and I do that with no problem. I tend to risk things that I think I have a fighting chance at, and not risk things that I think I don't. And everything Alon just said, I bought into completely. I love it absolutely. Is the idea that the risks I do take and things don't worry about it. If they don't work out, I still feel like I'm still on my path and my journey. I don't define myself by the businesses themselves. Define myself by something higher. And I think it's just about I tell you what I do fear. And it's a story I tell a lot, but I'll try and truncate it very quickly. When my great aunt died, 2 days before, I walked into a room and she was in tears. And I said to her, what was wrong? And the backstory was that she'd met this guy when she was 20, and she died in her 80s. And she'd met this guy and he proposed to her. And when she came back, her parents found out that he wasn't Catholic. So she never spoke to him again. came back to Scotland. It's a long story. But basically, when I saw her 66 years after that, before she died, I asked her what was wrong. And she said, I was wondering what my life would have been like if I'd married Leslie John Moore. And I realized that this is a poor lady who's lived her entire life, and her dying days were spent regretting a decision she didn't make. And so I will certainly, that is my biggest fear, without a doubt, is not trying things that I will regret later. And that's also why I don't want to be involved in my business for too long, because I will certainly regret that. So I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to solve fear. Just, I do have one little lesson for you. A friend of mine, Paul Jason, he's the president, or was the president, of EO Durban, Entrepreneurs Organization Durban. And he was running a race with his brother. It was one of these ultra marathons. And he started getting a cramp in his leg on like the second day or something. You know, he'd been running two full days and through the night. And he turned around to his brother, Mark. He said, dude, I can't run anymore. I've got this cramp. I just can't go on. And his brother turned around to him and said, dude, can I get you anything? Do you want anything? And he said, like, do you need a pill? And he said, yes, I need a pill. What do you have? He said, I have a cement pill. Harden the f*** up. And I guess that's my one little parting lesson, is have a cement pill. This isn't supposed to be easy. It's just supposed to be worth it.
I do love you, Rich. I do love you so much.
That's my third one, so I can't swear anymore.
Yeah, no, your F-bomb bank's full. Sorry, bro. Cool. Howard's... Just one more comment from you. I mean, just keep sticking with fear, if you don't mind, for a second. Like, how have you personally approached it? I mean, you've run massive companies, you know, employing hundreds of people to, you know, sort of lifestyle, I suppose, consultative business, I guess. Like, what's your take on fear? Like, what do you want to share with our audience today?
I think that, you know, the idea that it's going to go away is not the pursuit. I said to somebody, I think everybody's goal is to be fearless. But I think the actual goal is to just fear less. And the way to do that is to try to, you know, I was reading this terrific little book to my son, where this sort of Navy SEAL was teaching his nephew, to not fear jumping, off of this small bridge into water. And he was paralyzed looking down at the water. And the line was that fear is in the waiting, not in actually in the doing. And that once you just let go, there's this exhilaration in actually doing it. And in the things that my son is afraid of, I keep repeating that to him and say, you know, you're afraid of doing that thing because you're thinking about all the things that could go wrong instead of jumping into it and seeing that nothing will go wrong. I don't know who said the quote, but that we resist change because of fear of loss, less or never. And so if you can sort of sit in that fear and say, okay, what am I really afraid of? What happens if the business just goes away? What happens if this fails? And really sit in it. And then at some point you just have to jump. As long as it's not going to be fatal. You just have to jump into it. The thinking about it is where people get paralyzed.
It's hard to overcome though, because your mind tends to latch onto those things. We're very good at that. You know, it's the negative narrative. Do you know what I mean? That keeps me up.
Yeah,
at night,
but you find yourself somebody whose perspective that you trust. And you ask them to hold up a mirror and say, am I thinking about this rationally? And can you help me, lock arms and jump off the bridge with me?
Can I come in there? And I think what Howard, I think what you're saying is so important. And it's about, another way to say it, it's about getting a different perspective, because we also, you lock in, et cetera, and we view our reality from our eyes, from our experiences. It's always important to get another perspective. And to me, it's very important to have people in your inner circle who can call you out, can call you names, and can tell you how their perspective on this as well. Otherwise, you develop a very unhealthy relationship with whatever this thing is. And to me, you know, and I feel like there's an advert for Kumaran. That's Kumaran for me. I will call Kumaran at 11 or 12 and vice versa. Kumaran has called me at 1 o'clock in the morning. He knows I'm up and I know he's up. So we'll call each other and we'll just arrive at each other, pour a whiskey and say, am I thinking about this right? Because there's anxiety about unknown, and then all the questions are asked, and then the fear dissipates, and then you go. So perspective is and not your own, not just your own, is a very important part of how you control that fear.
Yeah, and Howard, you've got a great quote, when you're stuck inside the bottle, you can't read the label, right? And that's kind of that perspective.
Yeah.
That's the perspective.
It's hard to read the label from when you're stuck inside the bottle, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. You know, you can't. And your fears are you know, often go all the way back to things that you can't even remember in your past, and you're not even sure why you have them, and they're wounds from times you've gotten knocked down before, and so you're hesitant to them, and you need somebody else to say, hold on, you know, I'm calling bullshit on this, and you keep saying the same thing over and over again when that's not the reality of the situation. So you know, how would you feel if you didn't do this? You know, you have to help somebody sit on the other side of the argument and help them see, yeah, it could go wrong, but what if it went right?
How's it? My name's Jono from the Mesh Club. Right now we're at the Secrets of Scale on the Matt Brown Show. Just wrapped up the first episode. Really, really great quality panelists. Got some great information and sharing and influence from some experience from some experts in their industry. Can't wait for the next few episodes to come through. Make sure that you do attend the next one or stream in live. This is Jono out. Yeah.
Ever wanted to become a best-selling author? Well, I'm in the influence business and I work with business owners and CEOs and business leaders to help them scale their influence. And we do this as a team by helping you to become a best-selling author, sought-after speaker and industry influencer in only 30 days. My team and I have developed a system that delivers a best-selling book and a launch campaign 300% faster and 50% less cost than anyone else in North America. This system is incredibly efficient. One of my clients, Haiku, went from a 2% share of voice globally to an 11% share of voice globally in only 7 days. If you'd like more information, head on over to showworksmedia.com for more. That is showworks with an X.com.